or vast living things in the sky, as there are vast living things in the oceans. Or someone a special thing, and a special time, and a special place. A thing the size of the Brooklyn Bridge. It's alive in outer space, something the size of Central Park kills it. It drips. We think of the ice fields above this earth, which do not, themselves, fall to this earth, but from which water does fall. Popular Science News, 35-104. That, according to Professor Luigi Palazzo, head of the Italian Meteorological Bureau, upon May 15, 1890, at Massignati, Calabria, something the color of fresh blood fell from the sky. This substance was examined in the public health laboratories of Rome. It was found to be blood. The most probable explanation of this terrifying phenomenon is that migratory birds, quails or swallows, were caught and torn in a violent wind. So the substance was identified as bird's blood. What matters it what the microscopists of Rome said or had to say, and what matters it that we point out that there is no assertion that there was a violent wind at the time, and that such a substance would be almost infinitely dispersed in a violent wind, that no bird was said to have fallen from the sky or said to have been seen in the sky, that not a feather of a bird is said to have been seen. This one datum. The fall of blood from the sky. But later, in the same place, blood again fell from the sky. 28. Notes and Queries, 7-8-508. A correspondent who had been to Devonshire writes for information as to a story that he had heard there, of an occurrence of about 35 years before the date of writing. Of snow upon the ground of all South Devonshire, waking up one morning to find such tracks in the snow as had never before been heard of, clawed footmarks or an unclassifiable form alternating at huge but regular intervals with what seemed to be the impression of the point of a stick, but the scattering of the prints, amazing expanse of territory covered obstacles, such as hedges, walls, houses, seemingly surmounted. Intense excitement that the track had been followed by huntsmen and hounds, until they had come to a forest from which the hounds had retreated, baying and terrified, so that no one had dared to enter the forest. Notes and Queries, July 9, 18. Whole occurrence well remembered by a correspondent. A badger had left marks in the snow, this was determined, and the excitement had dropped to a dead calm in a single day. Notes and Queries, July 9, 70. That for years a correspondent had had a tracing of the prints, which his mother had taken from those in the snow in her garden, in Exmouth, that they were hoof-like marks but had been made by a bipt. Notes and Queries, 7-9-253. Well remembered by another correspondent, who writes of the excitement and consternation of some classes. He says that a kangaroo had escaped from a menagerie, the footprints being so peculiar and far apart gave rise to a scare that the devil was loose. We have had a story, and now we shall tell it over from contemporaneous sources. We have had the later accounts first very largely for an impression of the correlating effect that time brings about, by addition, disregard and distortion. For instance, the dead calm in a single day. If I had found that the excitement did die out rather soon, I'd incline to accept that nothing extraordinary had occurred. I found that the excitement had continued for weeks. I recognize this as a well-adapted thing to say, to divert attention from a discorrelate. All phenomena are explained in the terms of the dominant of their era. This is why we give up trying really to explain, and content ourselves with expressing. Devils that might print marks in snow are correlates to the third dominant back from this era. So it was an adjustment by 19th century correlates, or human truisms, to say that the marks in the snow were clawed. Hoof-like marks are not only horsey but devilish. It had to be said in the 19th century that those prints showed claw marks. We shall see that this was stated by Professor Owen, one of the greatest biologists of his day, except that Darwin didn't think so. But I shall give reference to two representations of them that can be seen in the New York Public Library. In neither representation is there the faintest suggestion of a claw mark. There never has been a Professor Owen who has explained, he has correlated. Another adaptation, in the later accounts, is that of leading this discorrelate to the old dominant into the familiar scenery of a fairy story, and discredit it by assimilation to the conventionally fictitious. So the idea of the baying, terrified hounds, and forest-like enchanted forests, which no one dared to enter. Hunting parties were organized, but the baying, terrified hounds do not appear in contemporaneous accounts. The story of the kangaroo looks like adaptation to needs for an animal that could spring far, because marks were found in the snow on roofs of houses. But so astonishing is the extent of snow that was marked that after a while another kangaroo was added. But the marks were in single lines. My own acceptance is that not less than 1,000 one-legged kangaroos, each shod with a very small horseshoe, could have marked that snow of Devonshire. London Times, February 16, 1855. Considerable sensation has been caused in the towns of Topsham, Lymphstone, Exmouth, Tynemouth, and Dawlish, in Devonshire, in consequence of the discovery of a vast number of foot tracks of a most strange and mysterious description. The story is of an incredible multiplicity of marks discovered in the morning of February 8, 1855, in the snow, by the inhabitants of many towns and regions between towns. This great area must of course be disregarded by Professor Owen and the other correlators. The tracks were in all kinds of unaccountable places, in gardens enclosed by high walls, and up on the tops of houses, as well as in the open fields. There was in Lymphstone scarcely one unmarked garden. We've had heroic disregards, but I think that here disregard was titanic. And, because they occurred in single lines, the marks are said to have been more like those of a biped than of a quadruped, as if a biped would place one foot precisely ahead of another unless it hopped. But then we have to think of 1,000, or of thousands. It is said that the marks were generally 8 inches in advance of each other. The impression of the foot closely resembles that of a donkey's shoe, and measured from 1.5 inches, in some instances, to 2.5 inches across. Or the impressions were cones in incomplete, or crescentic basins. The diameters equaled diameters of very young colts' hoofs, too small to be compared with marks of donkey's hoofs. On Sunday last the Rev. Mr. Musgrave alluded to the subject in his sermon and suggested the possibility of the footprints being those of a kangaroo, but this could scarcely have been the case, as they were found on both sides of the estuary. At present it remains a mystery, and many superstitious people in the above-named towns are actually afraid to go outside their doors after night. The estuary is a body of water 2 miles wide. London Times, March 6, 1855. The interest in this matter has scarcely yet subsided, many inquiries still being made into the origin of the footprints, which caused so much consternation upon the morning of the 8th ULT. In addition to the circumstances mentioned in the Times a little while ago, it may be stated that at Dawlish a number of persons sallied out, armed with guns and other weapons, for the purpose, if possible, of discovering and destroying the animal which was supposed to have been so busy in multiplying its footprints. As might have been expected, the party returned as they went. Various speculations have been made as to the cause of the footprints. Some have asserted that they are those of a kangaroo, while others affirm that they are the impressions of claws of large birds driven ashore by stress of weather. On more than one occasion reports have been circulated that an animal from a menagerie had been caught, but the matter at present is as much involved in mystery as ever it was. In the Illustrated London News, the occurrence is given a great deal of space. In the issue of February 24, 1855, a sketch is given of the prints. I call them cones in incomplete basins. Except that they're a little longish, they look like prints of hoofs of horses or, rather, of colts. But they're in a single line. It is said that the marks from which the sketch was made were 8 inches apart, and that this spacing was regular and invariable in every parish. Also other towns besides those named in the Times are mentioned. The writer, who had spent a winter in Canada, and was familiar with tracks in snow, says that he had never seen a more clearly defined track. Also he brings out the point that was so persistently disregarded by Professor Owen and the other correlators that no known animal walks in a line of single footsteps, not even man. With these wider inclusions, this writer concludes with us that the marks were not footprints. It may be that his following observation hits upon the crux of the whole occurrence. That whatever it may have been that had made the marks, it had removed, rather than pressed, the snow. According to his observations, the snow looked as if branded with a hot iron. Illustrated London News, March 3, 1855-214. Professor Owen, to whom a friend had sent drawings of the prints, writes that there were claw marks. He says that the track was made by a badger. Six other witnesses sent letters to this number of the News. One mentioned, but not published, is a notion of a strayed swan. Always this homogeneous seeing a badger, a swan, a track. I should have listed the other towns as well as those mentioned in the Times.